All right, everyone, you're going to love this episode, just like every other episode, but come on. I'm going to talk about some major information that you're going to need to research after listening to this podcast. There was an interview from a guy named Tim Dillon, and he interviewed a journalist named Whitney Webb, who has been following the Jeffrey Epstein situation. I'm going to talk about Jeffrey Epstein, some new information there. I'm going to talk about new information coming out. It's not new, but it's newly revealed, newly dispersed, really, information about how COVID could be used to bring in a new future of mass surveillance that we don't want. So take a listen. As normal, you can find me at tstuch.com, tstuch.com, Taylor, YouTube, Taylor Stutch. You can follow me at Twitter, tstuch1. Thank you and enjoy. Welcome, everybody. Sit down and get comfortable because this episode is wild. So there, in case you guys don't know, there's a really, there's a good comedian. He's got a, well, there's many good comedians. He has a podcast. His name is Tim Dillon. And he was recently on the Joe Rogan Experience. He's been on a couple times. He's really, really funny. He is a heavyset white dude, 38 years old, but he's got like a really his sense of humor is he's loud. If you don't like him, he's probably sounds obnoxious, but he's also very quick. Very, very, very quick. Like a lot of the top comedians are. Not a surprise. But basically, this guy is one of the probably top, you know, I would put him up there, one of the top comedians today. So what are we going to talk about? So in a previous podcast with Joe Rogan, Tim and Joe talked a little bit about Bill Gates and the COVID stuff. And here's what was interesting, is that Joe pushed back against the idea that Bill Gates was doing nefarious things with the vaccine. And I understand Joe's point of view. Basically, there are a lot of people who go after just rich, you know, billionaires, wealthy people, anybody who's successful. There's a lot of resentment towards people who make money. And a lot of that's misplaced. For example, we know about the anyone who's like a really hardcore Bernie supporter. Those are the kinds of people. And okay, let me back up here. If you're a Bernie supporter for the idea of implementing socialism on a nationwide scale, then that is the problem. Those kinds of people, sorry if you're one of them, but are the type that go after billionaires, wealthy people, people with money, and want to take, you know, hey, they're successful. They are obviously, you know, did it in an unfair way. We need to implement wealth taxes and everything like this and just seize people's property. And we don't want that. Okay. I'm not for that. Many people aren't for that. Because of that kind of narrative, I believe, you know, many people will jump to the defense of people like Bill Gates or like a Bloomberg or a Bezos, maybe when it's not warranted. So what Joe and Tim Dillon were discussing, how Bill Gates has some issues with his vaccine situation. So, you know, Bill Gates goes around the world advocating for kind of like public health. I think he's a big advocate of vaccines, and his foundation has, you know, there's been rumors and people kind of have this idea that his foundation, when it comes to vaccines, has done some shady stuff. Well, on the podcast, Joe Rogan was going after Tim pretty hard at first. And I think this is okay. I think people need to realize, you know, Joe Rogan's job isn't just to lap up everything a guest says. At first, Joe Rogan pressed him really hard and said, Tim, where's your facts? Because Tim was asserting that that Bill Gates was doing nefarious things in other parts of the world, like Africa, with, you know, these vaccines, kind of like taking advantage. Well, after some preliminary research by Jamie on the Rogan Experience, we find out that there are numerous cases of the Gates Foundation involved with vaccine injury cases in other countries like India and Colombia. And basically what it appears like is that they're running kinds of tests on these people. And I would not be surprised if that is the case. Now, I haven't looked into the matter deeply myself, but that was the gist that we get from that conversation was, yes, Bill Gates Foundation has been implicated in at least in more than a couple of instances of people getting injured by vaccines. And they're testing them out in third world countries. They're testing them out in poverty-stricken places where people aren't going to have the resources. They're not going to have the financial or the legal recourse to really fight people like a Bill Gates or a Gates Foundation. Okay, so it was an overall hilarious podcast. You should go watch it. But then a couple days later, like today's Monday, I guess on Friday or Saturday, I see Friday or Saturday night, Saturday morning, Tim says he's going to have a podcast about with somebody who is going to talk a lot about, like, I think Bill Gates, Epstein, all that whole thing. And so I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. So I tune in. And it was fantastic. There is a journalist named Whitney Webb, and she does – I haven't done a whole lot of background research on her, but – She has got a lot of information on the Jeffrey Epstein case. So she talked to Maria Farmer, who is somebody who came out against Jeffrey Epstein. So here, let's check her out real quick. Maria Farmer. I want to make sure I get this straight. So she is an American visual artist known for filing the earliest known criminal complaint to law enforcement in 96 about the conduct of late financier and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Okay, so this is Maria Farmer. So basically, Maria Farmer gave a three-hour interview to this lady, Whitney Webb, who was on Tim Dillon's show. And they spent a lot of the time talking about Jeffrey Epstein and things like that, which were really disturbing. And I don't want to talk about, I mean, okay, it's disturbing if you've never heard it before. But if you have heard it before, it's not as disturbing because it's not new. It's new, but it's not new. What I mean by that is that some of the things you're going to hear are new, but some of the things behind it, the overall gist of it, is not new. That essentially Jeffrey Epstein was running a pedophile ring, and there's a lot of things going on. So quickly, I want to kind of go through some of the things that they discussed, and then I want to jump to the COVID situation and see how that is evolving and provide some information that we need to look into in the future. So when it came to the Jeffrey Epstein situation in the podcast, Whitney reveals through her own research and through her conversation with Maria Farmer that the Epstein was not the only was not the only major player involved. So we already know that. But who else was involved? There was a guy named Les Wexner, who is a billionaire. I believe he owns many fashion brands. In fact, we can look him up right now. Les Wexner, CEO of L Brands. His name is Leslie Herbert Wexner. He's an American billionaire and businessman, the founder and chairman of emeritus of L Brands. So he has a lot to do with clothing, brands. And anyway, according to Maria Farmer, Epstein and Wexner were both involved in the running the sex ring, the human trafficking ring is how she, basically the way she describes it is the Epstein situation was not just people, it was a whole trafficking operation. There were multiple very high level people involved. She named people like Les Wexner. She named people like, she said the Clintons were involved. She said that, that not necessarily Trump himself, she said Trump was friends with Jeffrey Epstein for a while, but then there, this is from Maria Farmer, that Trump and Jeffrey Epstein had a splitting off back, I think, in the late 90s or early 2000s. She also said that one of Trump's wives, Ivana, would go around with Ghislaine Maxwell, and if you don't know who she is, you need to look her up. She was the mysterious lady that was supposedly helping Jeffrey get the girls. Apparently, this Ghislaine lady, her father was a very highly connected spy, worked for Israel, and he was eventually killed. But there's just so many weird connections that are going on. And this Leah, this lady, Maria Farmer, talks about a lot of what she saw, what she observed. And she was physically attacked, sexually assaulted, or she was assaulted right before she quit. And that's when she quit, because she said when she was assaulted, it all came together about how this situation was happening, like how people were being brought in and they were being told one thing, right? Like Maria Farmer was being told she was going to be an artist for Jeffrey Epstein, but she kept seeing all this weird shit with younger people coming in. And then eventually when she was attacked, she realized what was happening, that everybody was kind of being thrown into this strange kind of sex ring. So she also discusses some things, how Jeffrey Epstein was like a middle manager, how Jeffrey Epstein was not one of the top guys. Now, people who are following this story probably already know this, because he was killed, right? Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm going to say that because we're all pretty confident that's the situation. So Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. Maria Farmer, what she talks about kind of backs that up, and that he was a middleman, and Les Wexner was supposedly above him. There's apparently a lot of interesting ties going on between Les Wexner and other international billionaires and governmental organizations. And apparently Mossad is involved. But like I said, you know, I haven't seen that for myself. I don't know. But there's a lot of interesting things that you will, pieces of information that you will find if you listen to this interview. And it will help you find out who more people are. So when it comes to the Epstein situation, I would encourage people to look up Les Wexner, look up his connection to Jeffrey Epstein, look up Maria Farmer. In addition to that, look up Ghislaine Maxwell and her connections to all of this situation. Look up those four people and see what you can find. You'll probably find some interesting connections. She also talked about how they didn't just traffic girls in America, that they also trafficked people from other countries. Maria Farmer talked about how there were ladies from Southeast Asia that said basically they were stolen from their countries and brought to work in Epstein and what's his name, Wexner's homes. So there's a lot of shit. Now I want to get on to the later part of the interview, where they discuss the bigger implications of the COVID situation in the future for America. I cannot believe this, guys. My recording I just made for this segment was deleted because my phone died, and I had recorded a good, solid, almost complete segment. So I'm going to have to go through and discuss the situation again here. So, okay, what I was discussing was the current COVID situation, what we learned from Whitney Webb about the COVID situation, and how we need to going forward. So first off, I want to comment on the situation in the United States. We are in a very precarious place. It should be noted that there are deep divisions, or there are divisions along what we should do. There are people that want to open the economy now, and there are people that want to stay under lockdown. There are many people in between. But there have been protests across the country. We have seen protests in Michigan, in Texas, and I know in many cities across the country, people are going to the capitals of their states, and they are demanding that states open up the States for Business. And I understand this. And to some degree, it makes sense. But we have to be careful how we approach this. And I also want to take a second and say this is a reason why everyone should have a gun, right? Everybody should have a means to defend themselves, because you never know what can happen. You never know how the government might use a crisis to take advantage of our personal freedoms and our personal rights. So without further ado, let's dive more into what Whitney Webb was saying. Okay, so she talked about how so she mentions in her podcast with Tim Dillon that there is a plan. Oh, it's interesting. Basically, there is not necessarily a plan. There's not a plan, but there are multiple things happening or things that could be put forward that are very invasive into our rights. One of the first things she talks about was HARPA. So what is HARPA? Let's go ahead and take a quick look. So HARPA, I can tell you right now, is a program that was created last year, and it was even talked about in 2017. Now, this program is meant to stop mass shootings, or at least that was the claim of it, okay? So let's take a look at this. I'll tell you how it relates. So HARPA, according to Gizmodo, there's a lot of things on this. It says, it's a new plan before the White House to monitor neural behavioral predictors of violence. The Washington Post reported that the White House had been briefed on a plan to create an agency called HARPA, H-A-R-P-A, a healthcare counterpart to the Pentagon's research and development arm, DARPA. So if you don't know what DARPA is, they're that scary research facility that makes the robots that that do all the crazy shit, like jumping around and running around like dogs. It says, among other initiatives, this new agency would reportedly collect volunteer data from a suite of smart devices, including Apple Watches, Fitbits, Amazon Echoes, and Google Homes, in order to identify the neural behavior signs of someone headed towards a violent explosive act. The project would then use artificial intelligence to create a senior suite to flag mental changes that make violence more likely. According to the Post, the Harper proposal was discussed with senior White House officials as early as June 2017, but has gained momentum after the mass shootings in El Paso. So what Whitney Webb described was how this program could essentially be refitted to deal with coronavirus. So think about it. There have been lots of calls by people for Google and Apple to step up and provide information for contact tracing, or possibly provide information about how I've heard this multiple times, that you could, a lot of times your health devices will give you signs that you're about to get sick before you get sick. So the idea is that these mass surveillance programs could be put in place, like HARPA, something we would never want to happen under normal circumstances. These programs could be justified under the guise of watching people for your health. So you could have a situation where all of your devices are constantly being monitoring you for your quote-unquote health to make sure that you don't have the virus, right? Maybe your speech gets slurred, or your blood pressure rises, or, you know, all these different signals. Maybe you become depressed, could be sent back to databases where people are analyzing your data to determine whether or not you're quote-unquote sick, right? Now, some people might say, listen, Taylor, why should I worry about that, dude? I mean, they already got it. Well, the situation is we can't allow this to become, if it's going to happen, which I think it probably already does happen to a lot of things, it needs to be illegal. So that way, whatever people have on you cannot be used against you. Another thing is it needs to remain illegal, so that way we can still continue to go after and prosecute and whistleblow people that are collecting this data illegally. Now, one potential threat I see with this technology, that or with these programs where they're collecting all of your information, it said from Google Smart Homes, Amazon Echoes, right? They listen to what you say, they send it back to you. Even Google on my phone I know is listening to me. Now, they can take all this information, and yeah, maybe they'll use it to throw you in jail. I know some people might think like, oh, maybe they'll flag dissidents and that's how they'll stop people from rising up against the government. Okay, yeah, that's possible. But another possibility is that this data is just being used to blackmail people, right? So maybe an example I thought about was if you're a millionaire or somebody who's coming up in a certain town, city, district, and you want to challenge the prevailing political elites there, you could run into significant problems if those elites start pulling data that you have stored on a file somewhere and use it to blackmail you. Maybe it's the conversation you had with your wife. Maybe it's the conversation you had with your friend. Maybe it's a conversation you had with yourself, right? And they use that data and they say, hey, look, we're going to release this information on you, or, you know, we know you did this, we know you did that. And most people think that they don't do anything like that. But you never want to be in one of those positions where you can't do what you need to do because people have all your information, right? Just think about that. Just think about if you don't like Trump and you want to go protest. Well, what if, you know, Trump operatives started pulling your information because you went to a protest and putting it on Facebook? Things that, you know, just certain secrets that you just didn't want people to know about you. It could be the porn that you watch. It could be the friends that you have. It could be the conversations that you have. It could be notes that you take, right? So there's things that you don't want people to know about you. And they might be able to figure that out and spread it out to the world, right? Now, it's a very dangerous situation. And I am not saying that the COVID situation was created to push this agenda forward. This program can be repurposed from mass shootings because it's a surveillance program. And the reason for putting it out was going to be mass shootings. Now the reason for putting it out could be to watch people who could be sick. Now, what's another program? There's another program called DEEP. You're going to want to research this. DEEP is being put in place by Bill Barr. DEEP, Bill Barr. Okay, so DEEP program. William Barr's Deep State Resume. Oh no, that's not what I'm talking about. A.G. William Barr formally announces an Orwellian and it was Whitney Webb who wrote this. An Orwellian pre-crime program. A recent memorandum authored by Attorney General William Barr announced a new crime program inspired by war on terror tactics and is set to be implemented next year. So she writes that per the memorandum, Barr has directed the Department of Justice and the FBI to lead an effort to refine our ability to identify, assess, and engage potential mass shooters before they strike. The Attorney General further described the coming initiatives slated to be implemented early next year as an efficient, effective, and programmatic strategy to disrupt individuals who are mobilizing towards violence by all lawful means. More specific information about the program is set to follow with the recent memorandum, according to Barr, though it is unclear if that forthcoming document will be made public. Barr requested that those who receive the memorandum send their best and brightest to training at the FBI headquarters. So, she said the most jarring aspect of the memorandum was Barr's frank admission that many of the early engagement tactics that the new program would utilize were born of the posture we adopted in respect to terrorist threats. In other words, the foundation for many of the policies utilized following the post 9/11 war on terror are also foundation for early engagement tactics to identify potential criminals as part of this policy. So she's emphasizing potential criminals, that basically they will identify you as being a potential criminal based on collecting certain data about you without getting too far into it. So once again, the idea is that these programs were going to be used under the guise of mass shooting. Now we have a virus. So now it's possible to implement these programs under the guise of disease and safety. So what I wanted to say is that we're in a situation where we have to be careful. Here's my take. I believe that coronavirus is real. I believe that COVID is real and that there is a real legitimate threat from this virus. I believe it's dangerous, and I believe it did spread from China. I believe it could have spread from a lab. Now, that being said, there are also things we don't know about the virus. We don't exactly know how deadly it is. We don't know effects of it after you get it. We don't know if it ever leaves your body for sure. There's a lot of things we don't know. And it's important that we keep this on track. I am an advocate for if we open businesses, or we have to open businesses, when we do so, we need to do a controlled situation where people voluntarily wear masks, wear face shields, where people are careful, because we are in an unprecedented situation where the American people have to protect themselves, they have to protect their health, and they also have to protect themselves from their government at the same time. It's easier to protect yourself from a government encroaching on your rights when you don't have to worry about contracting a virus that's going to kill you or your family members. But now we live in a different situation. So not everything about this virus is fake. Not everything that you're going to hear is real. And now we have to step up and be able to take the lead in our own groups and figure out how to go forward. Anyway, that's all I got for today. Thank you for listening.